The Blue Jays getting set to open up a three-game set in Cleveland against the Indians. Josh Johnson against Ubaldo Jimenez. There's a line of storms coming through. Not nearly as bad as the ones we got in Toronto yesterday. But it may be an hour. It may be two or three until things clear out and we've got baseball. So plenty of rain delay program for you tonight. And again, the phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. While you're listening to the rain delay program, your opportunity as well to vote for Steve Delabar in the final vote for the All-Star Game, which is a week from tonight at Citi Field in New York. Steve Delabar, one of five American League candidates. Brett Cecil, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista already going for the Blue Jays. And Blue Jays fans, you can make a fourth Blue Jay player get there. Right now, Steve Delabar is leading in the voting among American Leaguers. You can go to BlueJays.com and place your vote for Delabar as many times as you want. There's no limit to the voting. You can also text from Canada if you text A2, the letter A, the number 2, to 101010. And you can do that as many times as you want as well to try to get Steve Delabar into the game. It looks like it's actually stopped raining for now right here. But, man, was it really coming down again. Not to the extent that it came down on me and most of the city of Toronto yesterday. And, again, hope everybody's got their power back. Hope everybody's dried out. Hope everybody's safe. Yesterday was a really, really rough night in the city of Toronto, and we hope to be able to entertain you tonight with some baseball. We just don't know when it's going to start. When it does, Josh Johnson will look for his second win of the season against Indians righty Ubaldo Jimenez. No real surprises in the lineup for either team. Edwin Encarnacion is DHing, and Adam Lind is playing first tonight. Emilio Bonifacio in at second. Munenori Kawasaki, who's been playing regularly at second against right-handers, not in the lineup tonight. John Gibbons saying they got to get Bonifacio some work, see if they can't get him going. This is the Northwood Mortgage pregame show, and because there's no game right now, it is the rain delay program here from Progressive Field in Cleveland. Phone lines are open, but before we get to the phone lines, some injury information for you, some updates. Sergio Santos is going to start for the Dunedin Blue Jays in Tampa tomorrow. Don't read anything into that. He's going to pitch an inning as he continues to work his way up. He is hoping to be back before or after the All-Star break. Melky Cabrera is going to need a few rehab games. Those may happen just ahead of the All-Star break. He may be back at the after the break as well. Maybe not. Brandon Morrow threw a 25-pitch side yesterday. He's going to do likewise later on this week. He reported feeling well with the Blue Jays. John Gibbons said he does not know when he's going to get another start on his rehab as he tries to come back from that forearm problem. And Brett Laurie is with the Buffalo Bisons now. They're the Blue Jays' top-level AAA farm club. Probably there through the week and will not rejoin the Jays until after the All-Star break. And tonight, Brett Laurie is in the lineup in Syracuse for the Buffalo Bisons at second base. What to read into that? Alex Anthopoulos told me it's just another chance to get a look. We shall see. But Ben Wagner does a fantastic job as a play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons, and he's become a good friend of ours and helps us out a ton. And Ben spoke to Brett Laurie for the Bisons pregame show today, and we've got that for you. Here's Ben Wagner with Brett Laurie. Ben started it off by asking Brett, how you doing?
Feel great. Ankle's a lot better than it used to be. Wow. You know, it's just given me life ever since I started baseball activity and stuff like that. And ever since that I came back, you know, early, it started to, you know, not bug me, but just kind of let me know that it was still in there a little bit, and then, you know, still kind of stuck with it. And I had, you know, I still had faith in what I, you know, my rehab and everything that I did to make it strong and get it better. And, you know, it just took a few days after that, and then it eventually just progressed. And now it feels like my other one, thank God, and, you know, we're definitely on the upswing.
Any residual pain day after your play or anything?
No, that's fine. It was there, like, my first game, like, I had to run, I had to leg out a double and I had to leg out a single. That was, like, my first real game, get out of the box kind of thing. The next day, it kind of was a little bit sore, but not crazy, just a little bit. But, you know, now every day that I play and the day after is never a problem, so definitely positive.
He'll start his rehab with Buffalo, at least this portion with Buffalo, but also a little quirk in where you've been playing for the most of your Blue Jay career, and that, of course, is your start at second base today. Did you do a double take when you saw the lineup?
I didn't get a chance to see the lineup. I walked in, and Skip told me that I was going to be playing some second base. You know, I didn't know until I got here, which isn't a big deal to me because, you know, I usually when I'm playing third base anyways, and we got shifts on, I'm usually playing in right center field sometimes. Sometimes I'm playing at shortstop. So, you know, it doesn't really matter for me just as long as I get a chance to play. And I don't mind second base. I was there my first two seasons as a minor leaguer, and I enjoyed it. So, you know, it's no problem for me. I like it.
You ever think about the possibility of you at second, Jose Reyes at shortstop, you guys together covering some serious territory?
Yeah, serious territory. I mean, left and right, you know, he's got great range left and right, and me as well. I feel like I can cover some ground over there at second base, so I think it would be obviously pretty cool to play with him up the middle. We could, I think we could do some fun things.
What do you want to do while you're here in Buffalo?
Just play, not worry about numbers, not worry about any of that. Just go and play. I need at bats. I need to just get in that game scenario, that game situation, and, you know, just not worry about anything. Just go out there and play and just go have fun and, you know, not worry about when I'm going back up to the big leagues because I really don't know when that day is. I haven't been given a date or anything, so right now I'm in AAA, only worried about AAA and trying to help these guys win and just going out there and playing baseball.
Obviously, the key focus will be the ankle, how that comes around, but also the timing at the plate. While you've got some at-bats and you've been able to log some and drive the ball a little bit, how are you feeling up there?
I feel good. I mean, every day's a little bit better. I see the ball a little bit better every day. So, you know, it just takes, you know, yeah, I had 40 games off. I had 40 days off and I was just sitting doing nothing. So, you know, it just takes a little bit. You need, you know, you need 30, 40 ABs to kind of get that rhythm back. And I definitely need that. So, what a better spot to be in. So I just need to go out there, get my at-bats in and not worry about anything else.
Thanks for the time today.
Yeah, cheers.
There he is, Brett Laurie, talking to Ben Wagner of the Buffalo Bisons Radio Network. We have just been informed that the game is expected to start at 7:40 Eastern tonight. So a half hour from now, we'll see about that. We'll see how long we can play until the rains begin again. We are expecting some more rain, but the rain has stopped right now. There are blue skies above us, but we can see some ominous clouds on the other side of the left field fence. But again, this game is expected to start at 7:40 Eastern time. Until then, we are in the rain delay program, and quite probably after that we will be in the rain delay program as well. And as we rain delay, the phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590, and we begin with Ronak in Chicago, listening on Sportsnet590.ca. Ronak, how's the weather over there for you?
Better than it is in Cleveland, Mike. I just want to call and say that before, first and foremost, I listen to your show every night after you post up the link on Twitter, and I'm a big-time fan, first-time caller.
So great, I'll let welcome you work aboard. Keep glad up the good to work. Have you. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, and moving on to keep on the same note, Brett Laurie, what do you think about the long-term view of moving him just towards second base as opposed to third base?
Well, it depends on who you get to play third. I don't get moving Brett Laurie to second so that Meiser Asturias can play third. I think that Brett Laurie is probably, if you'll forgive the English, probably more better than Asturias at third than he's better than Asturias at second. So I don't get it if that's the reason. If it's to increase flexibility, to have the option, which is the way Alex Anthopoulos has put it, and you know, just in case they bring in some big-time third baseman, then that works for me.
That's exactly what I think. I think that a lot of the reason that people are criticizing Laurie, besides his, like, fiery plays, because you have so many other good third basemen in the American League, like, you know, Machado, Beltre, and even Longoria on the Rays. So a lot of third basemen are big producers in the MLB and not as much as second basemen. So I think that if you move Laurie towards second base, it might even open people's eyes and see that maybe he just looks better. They're playing there, I guess. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't know. I don't think, you know, the bat has really, we really know. They're beginning to pull the tarp off the field, by the way. I don't think we have really seen the real Brett Laurie offensively yet. I mean, he came up as a 21-year-old, and he was fantastic in that 40 whatever game, a quarter of a season look. And then last year's first full season in the major leagues, and he got hurt in August. He really, you know, the league was adjusting to him, and he wasn't adjusting back. And he still managed to be okay last year. Not great.
Yeah.
And this year he didn't have a spring training, and he got hurt, and he came back early. And, you know, so I don't think we've seen the real Brett Laurie yet. I don't think that quarter of a season in 2011 was the real Brett Laurie either. I think that might have been a little too good. But, you know, I think there's a lot more in there than what we saw last year, and certainly a lot more than what we've seen so far this season.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm just tired of seeing people giving him slack on Twitter and social media websites. It's just like people are always constantly talking bad things about him, talking about things that he should do when they haven't even played. And then, you know, in the future when he goes off to produce, people are going to say that they were sticking right by him, just like they were with like Adam Lind and other players that are having comeback years now.
That is the nature of sports fandom, Ronak. I hate to tell you. Get used to
it.
I'm
all right,
trying
thank you,
to.
Mike, and hopefully we get the game in.
Yeah, thank you very much. They say they're going to start at 7:40. The tarp is in left field now, being prepared to be removed from the field in its entirety. They're going to fold it up. So 7:40, that's 25 minutes away from first pitch again. We don't know how far we'll get once we start, but we do expect there to be enough breaks in the weather tonight to be able to get a baseball game in. When it starts, it's going to be Josh Johnson against Ubaldo Jimenez. Right now, though, we are in the rain delay program. Eddie is in Fort Erie listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Eddie.
Well, that one little slug, we're going to have other...
Hello, Eddie. Eddie does not seem to be there.
Mike, hello?
There you are. Hello.
How's it going?
Good, go ahead. Is this like a bad cell phone or something? Sorry. Well, let's stick Eddie on hold and figure out what the deal is with Eddie. And if you can get a better line, call us back, or if you can figure out what's going on. But otherwise, let's move on to Andre, who's in Brooklyn, listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Andre.
Hey, how are you doing, Mike?
Doing all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I listen to your show quite often, and I follow the Blue Jays pretty well.
Glad to hear it.
Thanks. So I have a quick question. Basically, I was listening to Hayhurst, I think, and Jeff Laird today, and they were kind of talking about Josh Johnson and him being maybe possible trade bait, trade deadline. And basically, they were kind of talking about the Phillies and maybe possibly, I mean, hypothetically, maybe Cliff Lee being available.
Yeah, I heard about that. I heard that. It was actually with Sam Cosentino, who's now back hosting Baseball Central. So props to Sam.
Yeah, so what do you like, what are your thoughts on, you know what I mean, what the Jays might be trying to fetch? Like, are they going to be trying to, you know, maybe get something like a Lee, or would they be trying to get prospects? Like, what do you think, what direction do you think, if Josh Johnson was going to be put on the trade market, what do you think they could get for him, or what do you think they should trade for?
Well, I hate to so blatantly disagree with what was said on Baseball Central today, but I cannot see the Philadelphia Phillies having even the remotest amount of interest in Josh Johnson.
Really? But why? Like, he seems like, I guess, there's this whole notion of, you know, Josh Johnson being only National League ready.
That doesn't matter. I mean, when you look at where the Phillies are, right now, they have the same record as the Blue Jays. They're 7.5 games back. They're not going to make a change. If they're trading Cliff Lee, then that means they're saying goodnight to the season. So, if you know, they're not going to the idea of bringing over Josh Johnson, who is a free agent at the end of the year, to maybe resurrect himself in the second half of the National League, doesn't work for a team that's out of the race. And for a team that's in the race, it would be a huge flyer on Josh Johnson based on the way he's pitched so far this year. And there are going to be many other starting pitchers who have much better, who are having much better 2013s, who are available. To be completely honest, I see Josh Johnson right now as having absolutely zero value on the trade market, simply because he's a free agent at the end of this year. And so you're not going to get draft pick compensation for him if he leaves, if you trade for him. That's one. Another thing is he's having such a poor year this year that a contending team is going to want something a lot more dependable, and he's not that. And because he's a free agent at the end of the year, a team that's not in contention is not going to have any interest in him.
Well, I guess so, but maybe I don't want to take up your time too much, but I also want to ask real quick about the bullpen too, because they were talking about them having quite a few arms in the bullpen and maybe possibly, you know, throwing there saying Casey Jansen, or like, what do you think about that? And I'll hang up.
I think that I agree with them on that. There are a lot of arms in the bullpen, and there are, you know, potentially an excess of arms in the bullpen. And yeah, you can dangle some to see what you can get. You can, you know, Darren Oliver will probably be dangled. He's a guy who started this year as the number one left-handed option out of the bullpen. He is now the third option behind Brett Cecil and behind Aaron Loop. And I think the Texas Rangers have always been interested in him. And if you can get something worth your while, then maybe you make that move. If you can, you know, Dirk Hayhurst was talking about a Colton Wong or a Nick Castellanos for Casey Jansen. If you can do that, much as I love Casey Jansen, that's a deal that you have to consider really, really hard when you've got Santos, Delabar, Cecil in that bullpen. You can spare Casey if you can fill a hole with a good, good young player who's just about major league ready. I would investigate that pretty hard. I don't know if that's a possibility. I think it's a pretty high price to pay for a closer, as much as St. Louis and Detroit both could use him. I think that's something that bears investigating if someone calls and makes an offer. Thank you for the call. It's the rain delay program. It is not raining. The tarp is being pulled up. Josh Johnson is out warming up for the Blue Jays, and Ubaldo Jimenez is out there stretching for the Tribe. It looks like we're going to have baseball in it, and apparently the first pitch is going to be about 21 minutes away. Until we get there, we will continue to take your calls. So let's go to Brandon in Toronto, listening on our flagship Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Thank you for having me on the show. I actually just wanted to touch on a couple of things that you and your last caller were talking about, more about Casey Jansen.
Sure.
And I don't like the idea of trading Casey, because I just think he's probably our best arm in our bullpen, and I don't think it's. I'd rather kind of move someone else like Darren Oliver.
You're not going to get nearly as much. You understand that for Darren Oliver.
Yeah, I understand that. I don't know. I don't want to trade him either,
and I'm not saying they're going to, but I'm saying that if somebody comes calling and they come calling with a decent offer, with a good offer, then you have to listen.
It could happen.
Yeah.
But even if that happened, and I've been a little bit of doubter of Dustin McGowan, but lately watching him, his stuff's really good. I think you tweeted once, and you're like, well, imagine without the injuries the career he would have, and yep. I agree with you.
His stuff is just ridiculous.
His stuff is ridiculous. Can you ever see him if Casey left, the Jays giving him a shot?
Yep.
In the ninth?
Yeah.
Because I see Dustin McGowan, and if he doesn't get injured again, I just see that closer mentality. It's disgusting, and I think he could be a heck of a closer.
I think he could too. His stuff is off the charts. And it's amazing, even after all these shoulder surgeries, that his stuff continues to be off the charts. I can absolutely see him as a closer someday. I can see Steve Delabar as a closer. I can see Brett Cecil as a closer. And that's one of the reasons, again, that you have to consider a good offer for Casey Jansen. I don't want to trade him either.
Do you think Santos would have a high trade value, or just that he's injured now?
The guy's pitched 9 innings in 2 years.
Yeah, I know. It's been kind of a disappointment, all this hype around.
If he could be healthy, he could be terrific, but we haven't seen him healthy yet at all.
Well, let's hope he'll be back this season, right?
He should be back after the All-Star break.
Let's hope he'll stay healthy and have a good season for us.
That would be swell.
And vote Delabar.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon. Vote Delabar. Steve Delabar should go to the All-Star game, I think, and hopefully all of you out there think so too. BlueJays.com. And go vote for Steve Delabar. There's an unlimited amount of times that you can vote until Thursday. If you're on Twitter, use hashtag RaiseTheBar to let people know that you're voting. And on Thursday, when you tweet with hashtag RaiseTheBar, I think only between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern, but those tweets count as votes. Until Thursday, they don't. You can go to BlueJays.com and vote, or you can go text the letter A and the number 2 to 101010 from Canada, and that will count, too, as a vote for Steve Delabar, who's currently leading in the final voting vote. This is the Rain Delay Program. The Blue Jays and Indians are scheduled to begin in 16 minutes, so we'll take your calls for about another 10 minutes or so. And we're probably going to need you later in the evening as well. We are likely to have another Rain Delay Program. Harris in Toronto, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome aboard, sir.
Hi, Mike. Nice to speak to you again. Hopefully we have some continuous baseball tonight. But before I get started, I wonder if you treat this game like it's basically starts in the fourth inning, meaning you have a short lease on Josh Johnson, as five innings can be the whole game.
A short leash on Josh? Well, I think he's earned a short leash at the moment, but you're going to have to go into that a little bit more for me.
Well, I mean, treat it as if it's a tie game starting in the fourth, because if you get down early, it could be hard to come back, and you don't know how long.
Yeah, you got to worry about the rain a little bit, but I don't. I think the way the weather patterns are going, it looks as though it's going to clear up after 10 o'clock. So it doesn't look like the game is going to be called and be done, and that's going to be it. It looks like they'll finish it. So I don't think you treat the fifth like the ninth tonight, with the way the weather looks, but I see your point for some other games, yes.
Anyway, my main point is tonight it's about the Jays' first-round draft selection of Phil Bickford, and I understand that the signing deadline's on Friday afternoon.
That sounds about right.
And I think the camps are close. It's not being reported that they're close. And Tyler Beede was the only first-round draftee in 2011 not to sign with their team, the Jays, and too bad, because he's doing very well at Vanderbilt. But I also understand that we retain the pick if we don't sign him. So is this maybe a strategy by the Jays, knowing that Bickford may be a hard sign, to get the same pick for next year in what's presumed to be a stronger draft?
No. I believe the Blue Jays believe Phil Bickford will sign. And honestly, I thought that Tyler Beede made a huge mistake in not signing this year or last year, and I believe that Phil Bickford would have to have his head examined if he didn't sign this year. You know, you're out of high school, you're picked 10th overall. What are the odds that you're going to spend 3 years in college and come back and be drafted higher than 10th, not get hurt, continue to stay healthy? It defies all reason for Phil Bickford not to sign, and one expects that he will come to that conclusion before too long.
All right, thank you.
I really, really think it is insane of him not to sign.
Thank you very much, Mike.
All right, I appreciate the call. And the Blue Jays are confident that he'll sign, but honestly, when are you going to get the opportunity to make this kind of money again? The odds of getting hurt, the odds of your performance dropping. It only takes one bad year to fall from the first round to like the 12th. And a ton of money just goes up in smoke. You have to be getting some really, really terrible advice in order not to sign if you're in the situation that Tyler Beede was in last year and that Phil Bickford's in this year. I remember a quote from Tyler Beede last year. The Blue Jays offered him something like $2.8 million. I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly what it was. And Phil Bickford said, "I value a Vanderbilt education more than I value that amount of money." And my answer to that was, Vanderbilt doesn't value a Vanderbilt education that much. 4 years at Vandy is what? Maybe $120,000? If the school doesn't value it as much, I don't know why you should. It's the Rain Delay Program. First pitch scheduled for 12 minutes from now, but it seems a little ambitious. They're just taking the tarp off in left field now, but you never know. They could get it going. We will have it for you, and we'll have all the rest of the pitches as well as we continue. Blue Jays and Cleveland Indians. Let's go up to Thornhill. Brendan, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hello, Brendan.
Hey, Mike. Glad to see you on Sunday. I still hope to get one of my hands on those Vote Delabar t-shirts.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, no, not a problem. Now, hopefully this question isn't too difficult to answer. I guess it's more of an opinion based on your part. But based on how Josh Johnson has pitched this year, does the market for a potential big free agent signing of starting pitcher drive his value to 100 plus million, like what it would have been probably if he was a free agent after 2010 or 2011? Or do you think his value diminished if he keeps on pitching this way to the point where maybe the Blue Jays can re-sign him and it'll look more friendly if he bounces back to the way he was back before his surgery in Miami?
I don't think, first of all, I think his value is bottoming out. I don't think there's any team out there, if this continues, and I don't expect this to continue, I don't think Josh Johnson is going to finish the year with two wins and an ERA of 4.80.
No, neither do I.
But if it does continue, I don't think there's any team out there that would be willing to offer him a multi-year big money deal. I mean, he's looking at maybe 3 years and $20 million at the absolute top. And that's even a little nuts coming off the year that he's having right now. So I think the idea is that, you know, he's got to have a really, really good second half. And he's got to go out and you know, win a ton of ball games or at least pitch well, really, really well, in order to be able to get that big money deal. And I think it may already be too late to get that big money deal next year. I see, and as far as the Blue Jays are concerned, after a year like this, no chance they lock him up. And I think it's even taking a big risk to try to qualify him because, you know, you don't want to be stuck paying him $12, $13 million on a one-year contract next year, even with all that potential coming off a year like this.
Okay, I guess he really hasn't even earned maybe even like an Edwin Jackson type, which is $55 million. I'm maybe thinking
no
more
chance.
No chance off a year
like this.
Yeah, I think maybe even a Kyle Loesch type deal, I think it was about $33 million, could be a bit of a stretch for him after this couple of years. I guess I just like Josh a lot, and I know what he can bring to the table. It's just been disappointing for, I bet,
yeah,
all
it really has. I'm sorry, Brandon, I got to cut you off. We're getting ready to go here. And
okay,
as
Mike,
we
no problem.
Do,
thank
you for the call. As we do, let's listen to Jerry Howarth with Jim Leland.
We're managing 11 years in the minor leagues. Did you dream that you would then eventually manage as long as you have in the major leagues?
No, I never really even thought about it when I started managing minor leagues. I wasn't even thinking about the big leagues. It probably wasn't really until I got to AAA and I started managing against a few guys that had managed in the big leagues and went on to manage in the big leagues. And I thought, well, maybe you got a chance, but I didn't really think about it.
Did you see that you had a high ceiling and you had an aptitude to get better?
Well, you know, players make you better. I mean, I had some good players in the organization. One of your announcers, Jack Morris, pitched for me in the minor leagues, and I had a lot of those good young Tiger players. You know, I was there a long time, so a lot of those kids who were on that 84 championship team played for me in the minors. And, you know, I tried to study the game and talk to a lot of managers. You know, when I came up as a coach with the White Sox, Bobby Cox was at that time managing the Blue Jays, and Tony La Russa and I used to talk about how good we thought he was, and evidently we were right. We were pretty good scouts, but I didn't really pay much attention to that stuff.
Well, you bring up two names. Let's start with Jack because he's my partner on radio. He does a wonderful job. He's talked about 79 when he was in Evansville with you and what you meant to him. And did you see in him the 18-year major league pitcher that he would become?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I didn't. You know, you never know 18 years or whatever, but you knew he was going to be a great pitcher. You know, he had a ferocious attitude. He was a tough guy, and he also had great stuff. You know, those are all pretty good combinations. So I knew he was going to be a star pitcher in a big league, and I was right.
And you're both very aggressive, too. You both have that competitive gene, as I like to call it. You saw that in him. I know he saw that in you.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I tried to, you know, I like to compete. That's what it's all about. You know, I never really wanted to be a manager. I wanted to be a player. But obviously, I wasn't good enough, so this was the next best thing. But, yeah, I like to compete. That's what it's all about.
Jim Leland, were you a catcher when you were playing?
Yes, I was. I was a catcher, and I never got higher than Double-A baseball, to be honest with you. But, you know, that's okay. It's worked out good, and I'm happy with my career. It's been a wonderful career no matter what happens. This is my 50th year in baseball, so that's pretty good.
And isn't it amazing, too, how many catchers have turned out to be both managers and broadcasters and pretty good ones?
Well, you know, I don't know. I guess there is something to the catcher, you know, calling pitches and running a pitching staff, you know, on the field and that type of thing. And we also probably talk a lot. I guess that's why they make good broadcasters as well.
And your son Patrick is a catcher, isn't he, in the Tigers system?
Yeah, he is. He had labrum surgery on his elbow and on his shoulder, and he's playing actually first base right now. But, yeah, he is a catcher by trade.
Jim, you mentioned two names when we talked first about Jack Morris. You also mentioned Bobby Cox. When you saw Bobby early on, what did you learn from him? What did you take from him?
Well, Bobby was he was steady. That's what I was really impressed with. He never wavered. He seemed to be the same every day, and he seemed to manage every game the same. He never panicked. You know, you never saw him made any crazy move. You never saw him trying to make an impression on people how smart he was. He just, you know, like I said, he had good players, and he knew how to handle them. He knew how to run a game. And I thought he's one of the best managers that I've ever managed against by far.
So there he is, Jim Leland, the manager of the Detroit Tigers, with Jerry Howard. Thanks for that, and thanks for all your calls on the Rain Delay program. It is the Blue Jays Talk. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Brett Laurie update. He just hit a two-run homer for the Buffalo Bisons. He's 2-for-3 with a stolen base and 3 RBIs in his AAA debut this season. And he's playing second base. Phone lines are open. Let's get to him. We start with Steve in Hamilton, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Steve, you're up first on tonight's edition of the Blue Jays Talk.
Mike, I've heard a lot of people in the media, especially on The Fan, say that at the trade deadline that the Blue Jays should look to see what they can get for Josh Johnson. And I totally disagree with that, Mike. I think that they should do everything they can to sign that man, because he is a bona fide, when he pitches like that, he is a bona fide number one pitcher. And you just don't get rid of those, Mike.
Well, the thing is, he's going to be able to leave on his own after
the
season.
Yeah, I understand.
But
he wants
right.
To go.
He is. The problem is that for a bona fide number one pitcher, which he legitimately is, he has not looked like it this year.
He's had four games where he gave up 2 runs or less and lost all 4. Whose fault is that? His?
No, but I'm not talking about his wins and losses.
No, okay, but I'm just saying,
I'm talking about the fact that he's pitched beyond 6 innings 3 times in his 11 starts, and about the fact that he's given up 4 runs or more 6 times in 11 starts. That's not a number one, or at least that's definitely not pitching like a number one. And so the problem is that, you know, you re-sign him coming off a year like this, there's really no incentive to do that, and there's no get him to lock up long term. I mean, when people like Josh Johnson have the year that they're having this year at their age, what they do the next season if they're no longer under contract is they sign a short-term deal generally to try to rebuild their value and cash in the next year or two. Melky Cabrera did the same thing this year because of the drug problem, not because he didn't have a good year. So Josh Johnson's not going to be inclined to sign a long-term deal with anybody this offseason unless he gets a bucket load of money. And given the season he's having, he's not going to get a bucket load of money. So,
I really think they should think long and hard, because if you go by that stat, and some of their other guys that are long-term, they give up more runs, per start, generally, they have high ERAs, like 5. So, you know, like Burley, look how they're stuck with that. And
yeah,
and I'll
Burley,
tell you, Josh
it's horrible.
Johnson's
he's had
pitched
a 288 ERA
some
the last 2.5 months. He's been their best pitcher since May. Easily their best pitcher since May.
Burley's
the wrong guy to bring up if you want to rip the Blue Jays starter.
I'm not ripping anybody, Mike. I'm just saying that.
I just said they were stuck with that guy.
No, well, they're stuck with the long-term contract. That's all I meant.
Right, and he's been their best pitcher for the last 2 months. They're
but
very
he still
happy
gives up a lot of runs. I'm not knocking the guy. I'm just saying that long-term, I'd rather have Josh Johnson than Burley because of the age.
I would too, but Josh Johnson's not under contract.
No, I know.
Burley is.
I understand that. I'm just saying that it's not as simple as, oh, we're going to fix everything when we unload an arm like that. It's there's more wrong with this club than Josh Johnson. I'll tell you that.
I don't think unloading Johnson fixes anything, and I certainly don't think that he's going to get you anything in trade right now. So I don't know about the second part of that.
I just think that he has the potential, you know, to be a number one starter.
He absolutely does.
For 3 or 4 years.
No
and
argument.
And that's what we need to, you know, to have a horse like him. All I'm doing is sticking up for the guy. I think that given he got hurt, which didn't help his season,
right.
I just hope they don't just, you know, get rid of him for a second baseman. I'll tell you that.
They're not, that you can't. You can't trade Josh Johnson right now. Josh Johnson has almost no value on the trade market.
Well,
so the idea that they're going to pull in, pardon me?
Somebody's going to offer them something.
Yeah, somebody's going to offer them something, but not nearly as much as what a good Josh Johnson will get you.
No, I understand that. But I don't want them to just, to say, well, you know, we got an opportunity to get a second baseman. We need help at second base, so... You know, Josh is the guy to go. I think he's gonna have a fine year at some
point.
Why
would they do that?
Well, I'm just saying. The way that some of the people in the media have talked about, well, if the Jays aren't in contention, they should unload Josh Johnson and get whatever they can get. And you've heard it. I'm sure you have.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it makes sense. I mean, you have to listen with a critical ear. And if Josh Johnson continues to pitch this way, they're not going to get anything for him. So what they have to decide, I mean, not like he did tonight, he was fantastic tonight, but what they have to decide is whether or not it's worth giving Josh Johnson a qualifying offer in the offseason, whether you want to pay him that, whatever it's going to be, $13 million-ish for on a one-year deal. And if he takes it, you've got him for a year. And if he doesn't, you get a first-round draft pick and he goes somewhere else. So that's worth more to them than what Johnson can get you in trade right now, assuming you want to trade him.
Well, I hope they don't, because I see a bona fide number one starter, a horse like Halliday, and I just hope they don't make the mistake of trading him away.
Well, but they've only got him for the rest of this year.
I know, and if he doesn't want to stay, I understand that he's going to go. I understand that, but if that's communicated to the Blue Jays, then they have to get what they can get. But I hope we're told that Josh doesn't want to stay. We made an offer. He doesn't want to stay. I get if that's the case, then I get it.
Okay. I'm not sure you'll be told that if that's what happens, but chances are it would come out. And that's a real possibility. But if Josh is sure that he's not going to stay, then the Blue Jays extend the qualifying offer to him and they get a first-round draft pick when he leaves. So whatever package they would have to get back in trade would have to be worth more than that first-round draft pick. And again, the year Josh Johnson's having is going to be very unlikely someone offers that. But we shall see. I don't think they're out of it. I don't think Johnson's on the trade block. I don't think any of those things. Right now, the Blue Jays they've slipped to 7 games out of a playoff spot with the loss in the Tampa Bay win tonight. Bob in Toronto, you are listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and you are next on the Blue Jays Talk. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Mike. Well, I guess if you wanted an example of the kind of game that frustrates Blue Jays fans, this is a prime one tonight.
Anytime you get shut out, it's frustrating. Well, you add to that 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position.
Well, that's what I'm going to get to. I just want to make a quick comment. I can't believe that Jerry and Jack talked about Jimenez outpitching our guy tonight. I don't think we were watching the same game. But
well,
anyway.
he did get out of trouble a whole
bunch
of times. Well,
yes. It wasn't
and again,
he fortunate,
the truth
eh?
of the matter is, though, the truth of the matter is, and Jerry was 100% right, if it was a Blue Jays pitcher that had done that, that had limited the opposition to 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position, we would be praising him to the heavens for the job that he did and not at all talking about the failures of the other team.
Well, we probably would, but we'd certainly be thinking we were very fortunate to be able to do that. You know, and that's
so.
What I think
I
they were
that,
tonight.
But I hope so.
Yeah. I want to talk about plate discipline, and I haven't called this year until now because I really wanted to watch them through half a season and just see what I thought of the team and what were the areas that were of concern. And definitely plate discipline, the ability to put the bat on the ball in key situations, whether you call it hitting with men in scoring position. I would bet you that we are last in the American League East. You've probably had a chance through your screener to look this up, but you can look it up, and I'll bet that they are the lowest in the American League East in that
it's
sense.
It's funny that you think my screener does that.
I don't think your screener does it. I think you get the message in early enough in order to look things up.
No, I'm looking it up right now. What am I looking for?
Hitting with men in scoring position compared to the other
American
League East.
As far as the division is concerned, hitting with runners in scoring position.
Yep.
Right? The Blue Jays are behind Boston, Tampa Bay, and Baltimore, and ahead of the Yankees.
We are ahead of the Yankees.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Oh, wait a minute. That's in runs with runners in scoring position.
Hitting with
batting
men.
Average? You want batting average?
No, hitting with men in scoring position.
So you want batting average with runners in scoring position, right? Well, what do you consider to be hitting?
The ability to knock runs in.
And
the ability to knock runs in, whether it's a fly ball, ground out, or whatever.
You can't measure them by RBIs with runners in scoring position because every team has a different number of opportunities.
Well, I asked you the question. I guess you don't have it
per plate appearance.
I guess you don't have it the way I'm asking you.
No, it's much too esoteric for me.
I can imagine. Hitting with men in scoring position. That's not hard to understand, Mike.
There must be a
statistic for that.
There's a statistic of batting average with runners in scoring position. There's on-base percentage, OPS, slugging percentage. There's no RBIs per plate appearance with runners in scoring position.
How about batting average compared to other teams in the American League each? How about strikeouts? I know we've got two of them
in the
top 10.
They're the same in the American League East. Batting average, they're ahead of the Yankees and behind everybody else.
Exactly. You know, and Mike, you watch them every game, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you not run that conclusion as well as to how many times you see an Aaron Sebia get up there? Davis tonight, he gets a base hit, but he doesn't get a base hit when there's men in scoring position. We've got Aaron Sebia and Rasmus in the top 10 in strikeouts.
Yep.
Yeah? Haven't you come to the same conclusion that they cannot put the bat on the ball meaningfully when they need to?
No.
You haven't.
And I'll tell you this. The Blue Jays' batting average with runners in scoring position is actually 10 points higher than their batting average overall, which means it's probably about 12 to 15 points higher than it is with their batting average without runners in scoring position. They're actually a better hitting team with runners in scoring position than they are without. Games like this stand out huge because tonight was terrible. I mean, there's no putting a happy face on this. You go 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position, and you can't even get... Well, they only had one runner at third with less than two outs in the game, and they couldn't score them. So there was only one situation in which a fly ball would have scored a run, or two, because it was the same guy with nobody out. So there were only two situations in which a fly ball would have been enough to score a run, and the Blue Jays couldn't do that. But, yeah, they were awful with runners in scoring position tonight. But the overall, they're 11th out of 30 teams in the major leagues at hitting with runners in scoring position. Again, games like this stand out. Other frustrating games stand out. They're 8th in the major leagues in OPS with runners in scoring position. So they're not nearly as bad as you think they are.
How is their batting average compared to other teams in the American League East?
They're hitting .261 with runners in scoring position.
No, I mean overall.
Tampa Bay is hitting .290. Baltimore's hitting .278. Boston .276. And the Yankees .246.
Okay. Well, it's definitely frustrating.
It's funny. All those teams that are ahead of them, the Blue Jays are playing .500 against. It's the Yankees that have clobbered them this season.
So where do you? What would you say is the Blue Jays' main problem, Mike? Why are we 43-46 right now?
For the most part, it's the starting pitching. The greatest reason the Blue Jays are 43-46 is because they have gotten craptacular starting pitching relative to the way it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that, definitely.
But you've just gone on for the last 5 minutes. Well, with the hitting.
Well, because you just named the fact that they were fourth out of five teams in the American League in hitting. So
yeah, but no, in the American League East. But they're eighth out of 30 teams in the major leagues.
Yeah, but they're not trying to beat the other 30 teams. They're trying to win in the American League East. They're trying to win in the American League East, and it
shows
up.
But you know, I mean, you know what I'm going to tell you, right? You know that against the, if you take the Yankees out, they're 16-17 against the American League East. And it's the Yankees that they're ahead of. So the two things don't balance.
No, they don't.
Right. Which is why your exasperation, while completely understandable after tonight, in the overall is not well placed.
Believe you me, I'm not saying this as a critic of the Blue Jays.
No, but I'm presenting you with facts. I know, and I'm presenting you with facts, and the facts don't support your notion that the Blue Jays are terrible at hitting with runners in scoring position. The facts say they're in the top 25% of the major leagues, almost top 28% of the major leagues at hitting with runners in scoring position. Tonight was terrible. No denying. Tonight was terrible. But tonight is certainly not the usual. I got to let you go because we're up against the clock. We will continue the Blue Jays talk on the other side on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on sportsnet590.ca and Rogers Radio app, Rogers Digital Cable Channel 904. Blue Jays get blanked 3-0 by the Indians. It is the Honda Post Game Show on the Home Hardware Blue Jays Radio Network.
Up with all new gear at BlueJays.com. Keep listening to Toronto Blue Jays baseball. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I'm Andrew Nye. Masai Ujiri has made his first significant free agent signing as Raptors GM. The team has agreed to terms on a 2-year deal with former Indiana Pacers forward Tyler Hansbrough. Brendan Shanahan, Scott Niedermeyer, Chris Chelios, Fred Shiro, and Geraldine Heaney all...
One two pitch. Breaking ball, a swing and a miss. He struck him out. 9 up and 9 down for Josh. That includes 4 strikeouts.
Those were the good days, huh? First 3 innings of the ball game, Josh Johnson was perfect. 4 strikeouts, and he struck out Michael Bourne to start the 4th. So it was 5 strikeouts. Perfect. But then he walked as Drubal Cabrera and gave up back-to-back-to-back singles to Jason Kipnis, Nick Swisher, and Michael Brantley. The only 3 hits he allowed, the only 2 runs the Indians got off of him in 7 innings. But that was enough. Because the Blue Jays didn't score. They lose to the Cleveland Indians 3-0. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. And long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Let's go back to the phones to Jake in Toronto. You're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good evening, Mr. Wilner. A couple quick Hello. Comments, and sure. then I'll listen to what you hear and all of your sagaciousness.
Wow.
First, I want to talk about Kobe Rasmus.
Sure.
I think he's one of the best base runners on this team. The reads he gets on balls going first to third, and I noticed that recently, not tonight, but recently, are really, really impressive. But I just looked up his numbers, and he has 24 career stolen bases and 39 attempts. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious to see if the Blue Jays would ever encourage Rasmus to steal bases, how successful he'd be at that. Because I think he has the capability to steal more than he does. I think he has 0 stolen bases this year, and he has pretty decent speed. So I'm surprised that we don't see a little more of that from Kobe Rasmus.
You know, there are guys, and Rasmus may be one of them, who don't read pitchers well, or who don't get great jumps, or who don't have that great first 2 or 3 step acceleration, which makes it very difficult to steal bases. And you know, when we see Colby going first to third or getting a double, he can really move. But I'm wondering when that extra boost starts and whether that's the issue, and that's why he doesn't steal bases. I remember back in the old days, Alfredo Griffin was one of the best base runners the Blue Jays had.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought he was incredibly quick. Terrible base stealer. Terrible percentage base stealer and, you know, got thrown out almost half the time. There are guys like that who don't steal bases well despite other sorts of kinds of speed.
Okay, that's fair. Still something I'd be curious to see. Second comment, and you talked a bit about this on the rain delay show. Casey Jansen and the conversation that Mr. Hayhurst began earlier with his blog on sportsnet.ca today. Now, I agree with Mr. Hayhurst that closers are used pretty ineffectively in Major League Baseball. I mean, there's no reason for your best reliever to come in when you're up by three facing the bottom of the order.
Right.
But my trepidation with shopping Casey Jansen, not that they'd give him away for nothing, I think the return would have to be huge, but my concern is that they have lots of great arms in the bullpen, but none of them have the track record that Casey Jansen does. And if we've learned anything from watching bullpens over the years, it's that it's probably the most volatile area on a ball club. So as well as Steve Delabar's pitching, as well as Aaron Loop and Brett Cecil are pitching, and Sergio Santos could be that, but who knows with all of his injury history,
none
of these guys have the sustained success that Casey Jansen has. So my fear with trading him is that you'd be risking a lot by giving up such an effective relief pitcher, closer in Casey Jansen.
Oh, I think you'd be risking too, but that's why the return has to be terrific, like you point out. But you know, you never know whether a guy is going to be able to do it until you give him the chance to do it. And you're right, Casey had a sustained track record long before he became a closer. Every healthy year he's ever had, he's been great. And Delabar, this is his first full year in the major leagues. Brett Cecil, this is his first year as a reliever, and he's been tremendous. Sergio Santos, one hopes, is past it, but for now, the guy's a piece of glass. Dustin McGowan hasn't been able to stay healthy. Neil Wagner's kicked around the minor leagues forever. Juan Perez is 34. None of those guys are someone you would say, okay, we're confident that we can give him the ball in the ninth inning every game. He can close, and he can be as good as Casey Jansen was. You're absolutely right. But if the return is significant, you've got five guys who could potentially step in and be the closer, and it's certainly worth considering, I think.
Sure, but I mean, if the return is significant for any player, be it Bautista or Edwin, you trade him. But I don't think this is a guy you should be looking to shop. I think things could have been different if you had someone like Scott Downs who had a history of success without ever being a closer, but they don't have that yet.
I don't think anybody's shopping Casey Jansen, though. I don't think they're shopping Casey at all.
No, I don't think they are, but I felt like that was the tone of some of the conversation that I've been hearing today, and I think it's wrong-headed at this point.
Okay. All right, thanks, I'll give you that. I'm not shopping Casey, but if someone makes a phone call and offers me some of their best meats and cheeses, then we're going to talk. Adam is in Vancouver. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Mike. Love the show. Two quick things I wanted to touch on here.
Yeah.
Do you see JP as our starting catcher next season? His inability to move the runners over. I've just had enough. He's taking way too many pitches and counts. When he really just needs to be pushing the ball into the middle of the infield or even
taking too many pitches? I think you're the first person ever in the history of this show who's called in to say J.P. Arencibi is taking too many pitches.
I'm just saying in terms of at-bats with runners on, I feel like he's taking too many pitches. Tonight, for example, he looked at a borderline pitch.
Uh-huh.
Again, right, he's not moving the runners over. That's been a common occurrence. He'll get to two strikes, and then he's done.
You're honestly upset that he looked at one borderline pitch tonight?
It's not so much what he's looking at, just his inability.
That guy's taken nothing but crap for the whole season for being too aggressive, for swinging too much, for expanding his strike zone. It's just not fair to give him crap for taking a pitch.
Okay, well,
it really isn't.
I haven't been one of those guys, it's a two-strike count. There's runners on. Don't you think he should be, pretty aggressive in that situation?
Yeah, but people hate that JP's aggressive.
Well, I'm in the minority there. I'm not one of them.
Okay, that's good.
Anyways, also, I just wanted to ask you why Brett Laurie would be playing second base in the minors tonight?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. As far as JP goes, I'll say this. Again, he is top 10 among catchers in... He's leading all major league catchers in home runs. He's 10th in doubles, 7th in runs batted in. So JP's not as terrible as everybody thinks he is. The OPS... the on-base percentage is horrific. It absolutely is. But, I mean, running out of patience, fine. He's doing a lot of good things still. Not doing as many good things as we want him to do, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
He is the 8th hitter in the lineup, which is perfect spot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing more good things than most people give him credit for. As far as Brett Laurie, I asked Alex Anthopoulos why Brett Laurie was playing second base. I thought he was in Cleveland, and I kind of was trying to get him on the rain delay show, but he went on a scouting trip from Cleveland, and he'll be back tomorrow. He says for Laurie, it's just another chance to take a look. So there doesn't seem to be anything brewing as far as dealing for a third baseman. I can't imagine that you think Laurie at second and Asturias at third is a better defensive layout, although it's possible with the fact that second baseman gets that many more balls, but Brett Laurie is so much a better third baseman than Meister Asturias is. I don't know if he's as better a second baseman as Asturias, but then I've never seen him play second base. So
exactly.
We'll see. We'll see.
Okay. Thanks for your time, Mike.
All right. Appreciate the call. More of your calls coming up on the other side of the 20 update, 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell, long distance. 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays get blanked by the Tribe in Cleveland. It is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So you can ring up another 0-for-3 for the Blue Jays with runners in scoring position tonight and make it 1-for-10 overall. Yeah, and they didn't get another shot after that fifth inning with a runner pass first until the ninth, when one-out singles by Meister Asturias and Rajay Davis brought the tying run to the plate. J.P. Arencibia struck out on three pitches, and pinch hitter Josh Toley lined out to shortstop to end the ball game. The Blue Jays fall 3-0 to the Cleveland Indians. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your calls right up to the top of the hour. Let's go to Carlos in Richmond Hill. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hello, Carlos. Carlos is not there. That's too bad. That would have been a fun call, I'm sure. Mark in Niagara Falls, are you there? Mark's not there either. Wow, we're 0-for-2. And there's nobody in scoring position even. How about Lee? Lee in Toronto, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, great.
How you doing?
Good, I'm glad to have somebody.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get a complex.
So,
what's going on, Lee?
Well, somebody asked earlier, why are the Jays 43-48? And I think I'm going to tell you why I 43-46. I think they got three major deficiencies. Two are related, and I'll tell you why. One is starting pitching, as you said. And the other is they just don't have a bat off the bench. When they've got a 200 hitter like Bonifacio and they need a pinch hit for him, they got nobody on the bench that can come off and with pop, you know, they can hit the ball. And the reason, I think, is because they have too many people in the bullpen, and the reason they have too many people in the bullpen is because they don't have enough starting pitching. So it's all related.
It is all related, but I think that there's this myth that there are teams who have, there are American League teams who have these great bats off the bench. And I don't really think there are. I mean, I get what you're saying with Bonifacio or with whoever you want to pinch hit for. The Blue Jays don't have a big bat off the bench.
Yeah.
But who does?
Well, I think to win, if you don't have one, it's
Boston
hard.
Boston doesn't have one. They're winning.
Okay.
Oakland and Texas don't have one. They're winning. Detroit doesn't have one. They're in first place.
Well, I think we have some.
I think that's a bit of an outdated view, I have to say.
Okay, and here's the third thing. There's one more thing.
Yeah.
I think second base is a very important position, and they're too weak at second base.
They're definitely weak at second base.
And you can't. I don't think you can win with that.
They
important.
Won a World Series with terrible shortstop and catcher.
Sorry, who did? Toronto?
The Blue Jays, yeah.
Who was there?
Manny Lee and Pat Borders.
They didn't win with Manny Lee, I don't think.
Yeah, they did. In 92, they won with Manny Lee.
Was it Manny Lee? Fernandez in 93.
Yeah.
I thought it was Fernandez. Was it Manny? No. I thought they
it
lost.
Was. We're not going to argue this. Manny Lee was the starting shortstop in 1992. Terrible.
And Borders
Average
wasn't
Average defensively
terrible.
At best and couldn't hit at all.
Borders won an MVP
not,
in the World Series.
Right. And muzzle tough to him. Borders, you know, anyone can put 20 at-bats together. Borders was a well below average hitter. And behind the plate, he blocked balls in the dirt really, really well, but he didn't do anything else well.
But they,
you
look,
can
that team,
win.
That team had five starting pitchers. I mean, you can't compare.
No, it didn't.
They had three for sure. Like
I mean, really, and the reason I keep pointing it out is because we build them up in our minds when we think of those World Series teams. We think of them as perfect teams that didn't have any holes and everything went right for them and everybody had really good years, but that's just not the case. I mean,
Joe Carter,
on his best day wishes he was Jose Bautista. Now, the Blue Jays in 1992 won a World Series with, and I said Manny Lee couldn't hit. Kelly Gruber had a worse OPS than he did that year.
You can hear me say, like, I think they have a championship caliber outfield. I do. I think they have some championship caliber bats. I just don't think that they're strong enough, and because of the weaknesses in those areas, to be a championship team. They're a good team. They're fun to watch. I like them. But I think they got too many weaknesses to be a championship team.
Right, but the starting pitching, there's no question that what you're talking about with the starting pitching is absolutely true. It's been a weakness.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to illustrate is that memory is a strange thing, and you don't, you know, you can win a world. The Blue Jays in 1992 had two starting pitchers with an ERA under four, just two. They had offensive black holes at catcher, shortstop, and third base, and they won the World Series. They were below average defensively in the outfield corners. There were a lot of holes on that team, and they won the World Series.
Well, they had, you know, defensively one of the best center
second
fielders
baseman ever, and one of the best center fielders ever. Yes,
ever.
They did.
Up
yeah,
the middle,
they did, and they had a great defensive third baseman as well.
Yeah,
but nobody else was above average defensively. You know, and there were a lot of holes, and people would be calling this show and talking about Kelly Gruber's 275 on base and, you know, Pat Borders 290 on base and the fact that again, only two starters with ERAs under four and talking about all those weaknesses. You can win with weaknesses. You just have to overcome them. And if the Blue Jays, honestly, I believe if the Blue Jays starting pitching was better, that would be enough to overcome all the weaknesses.
Well, I agree. If they had starting pitching, you could probably take a couple of guys out of the bullpen and put a couple of bats in there.
No, maybe one.
One.
Yeah, maybe one.
Yeah.
But again, what bat?
Well, you got to find them.
Yeah.
You got to find them.
Right.
And
all the guys who are, I think, the guys who are at the level that you're talking about as bats off the bench, if they're that good, they're starting somewhere.
Can I just add one thing, a note of optimism?
Sure.
You know, putting this year aside, with all these pitchers coming back, right, next year might be a complete turnaround for starting pitching. And with the bullpen that they have, I mean, they could be really close.
The second half might be a complete turnaround for the starting pitching.
Well, yeah, but we got to wait a bit. But when that happens, I mean, maybe. But I'm thinking next year could be unbelievable if the starters come together. And maybe should they use some of the starters they have now as trade bait to fill up some of those other areas? I'll leave that with you.
No. No. I mean, it always depends on the return, right? Always depends on the return. But for me, no. I mean, you look at who are the starting pitchers who are coming back. You've got Morrow, Happ, Drabek, Hutchison, Romero. Coming back. Drabek was not any good when he was here, though I believe there's a ton in that arm. Hutchison, I thought, was terrific. Happ was a very journeyman-y guy until this season. aside from his rookie year. So you're not. It's not like there are superstar, all-star superstars on their way back. And you don't have a fifth starter right now in the major league team. And you don't know what you've got with Esmil Rogers. And Josh Johnson is likely leaving after the season. So they're going to have holes to fill. So it's not going to be an extravagance of riches, I don't think, with the starting rotation in the future. But it is nice that those guys are bubbling beneath the surface. Thank you for the call, Lee. I appreciate it. Dave in Toronto, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Thank you. I love your show. I've been listening for a while, and it is, don't take this wrong, but it's the most remarkable comedy radio show. It keeps me in stitches. It is so funny.
There are a lot of people who think that. It's fun.
Oh, my God. They are on the verge of holding the record, the Blue Jays, of missing the postseason. They're on the verge of holding the record.
Well, holding the current lead for most years, missing the postseason.
Now, Kansas has got to pull a miracle off to do it But of course, Kansas has been intentionally missing the playoffs so that they could get the league money. So when you really think about it,
I don't know if that's
true. Sports franchise, the Blue Jays, in all of North America.
No, that's
They're
not true.
Well on their way to
Dave,
20 games off.
Dave, you're going to be part of the comedy because you know that's
so,
not true.
It's just so funny, man. Like, everybody there is deluded. Just deluded.
As far as...
they just need to trade this, and they just need... They have holes throughout the entire lineup. They're flawed. They don't need three starting pitchers. They need five.
It's funny that you call in, and the first thing you do is rip other callers because you think they're deluded, and then you say stuff like that. Because all that does... is just show that you're either really trying to exaggerate for effect or you have zero clue as to what you're talking about. Zero. And if you're going to make a call like that, then it's really the wrong move to start off by insulting other callers. Yes, if the Pittsburgh Pirates make the playoffs this year, and what a stunner it is that the Pittsburgh Pirates are having a great first half. Boy, that's never happened before 2 years in a row. And they finished under 500. But to talk about the Blue Jays being the worst, it just shows that you just have no clue what you're looking at. None whatsoever. You were equating the Blue Jays having not been in the playoffs since 1993 with the Pittsburgh Pirates having not been over 500 since 1992? Those are not... equatable things. And you talk about North American pro sports when in every other major North American sports league, twice as many teams make the playoffs as they did in baseball until last year. There are people listening to this program right now who are laughing their asses off. One of them is not John Gibbons, because I firmly believe he does not listen to the program. But he does talk to the media after every game and before every game. And tonight he spoke to the media in the wake of the Blue Jays 3-0 loss tonight to the Indians. And I just said tonight in like twice in six words, so sorry about that. But let's listen in. Here's what John Gibbons had to say.
John, a tough one tonight. The offense had opportunities early in the game but couldn't catch.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened. I mean, I thought Josh was great. You know, I mean, that one inning he gave up those two runs, but shoot, that's what we look for at him. You know, if he can do that every time he goes out there, you got a shot. I mean, it was a lot like that game in San Francisco when he came back from his arm injury, you know. Pitched a heck of a ball game. We just didn't get any run support, you know. We had that shot early, you know, got first and third and then second and third. Couldn't plate anything, and that, you know, in tight ball games, that comes back to bite you.
In the fourth, John, and you went out to visit him, which isn't normal, a mound visit for you in the middle of an inning. What was your message to him?
Well, that's between us, you know, but I thought he pitched a great ball game. I really did. Good enough to win, that's for sure.
Do you see any difference when he pitches out of the stretch? It seems he might go along, pitch really well for three, four innings, give up a walk, and then boom, 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 a whole bunch of hits come afterwards?
Well, you know, I don't know if that matters. You know, it all comes down to location. You know, you see up on the board after the pitch, you know, center cut. The hits they got, and they got a good lineup. I mean, they can hit over there, you know, and they make you work. You know, we out-hit them, we just out-score them. That's the problem.
When Louis threw up his hands and held up Rasmus, kind of surprised everybody. Did that change the tone of that inning, do you think?
No, I don't think so. He's done a great job at third base this year. He really has, you know. No outs, you know. No, didn't consider that, no.
Do you think Josh is a little bit snake-bitted? It's not the first time he's putting up a good effort, and the team just doesn't seem to get much behind him.
Well, I don't know if it's snake bit, but, you know, I mean, that's encouraging that outing like that. I mean, that's what you want out of it. You're not always going to shut everybody out every night, but you hold the game in check, give your offense a chance maybe to take over, and we just couldn't get anything going tonight. We had a couple shots, we left some guys on base, but couldn't get that big hit, you know, even in that last inning, you know. And put a couple guys on, but couldn't string any, you know, or hit a ball in the gap or anything like that.
In that inning, when you had the big threat going, it looked like, you know, what you were talking about before the game with Bonifacio, you know, pulling that ball to right field. Is that the kind of thing you were talking about in that situation?
Well, I mean, every at-bat's different. I mean, when you look overall, I mean, he's the type of hitter, he's got to use the whole field, you know, and then shorten up a swing and slap some balls to left field, you know. You don't just pick out one particular bat. I mean, just looking at the whole. I mean, that'll help improve. That's what kind of hitter he is, you know.
There's John Gibbons. His thoughts on tonight's loss, he would not reveal what he said to Josh Johnson when he came out to the mound after that RBI single by Michael Brantley in the fourth. That was, I think that's the first time this year I've seen John Gibbons go out and not Pete Walker in a situation where you're not taking a pitcher out. He wanted to deliver a message. He did it quickly, and he walked away, and then Johnson didn't give up another hit the rest of the way. He only gave up three, but they were all in a row, and two of them resulted in runs, and that was more than enough for the Cleveland Indians tonight. They beat the Blue Jays 3-0. We are back at it tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, for a 7:05 first pitch. It'll be Esmiel Rogers against Justin Masterson. The Blue Jays try to pick up a win here against the Tribe. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.